Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the weekly, always weekly, regular scheduling part of your life, Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos, that's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, they said it couldn't be done. 2 weeks in a row, my friend.
We're a bit like the Marvel Cinematic Universe release schedule, where one drops and then you've got to wait 4 or 5 months for the next one, but it is a continuing story.
I hope we're closer to Endgame and not the last couple TV series.
Oh, every morning I wake up and I think I'm closer to Endgame.
Yeah. All right. First, how are you?
Good. TTC not as good this morning.
Ooh. Okay. Let's get the TTC review.
Bus to Shaw. Yep. Streetcar to McCall.
Mm-hmm.
Short walk.
Yep.
And then one more bus. So it only took me, I think, well, if I make it specific, 1 hour and 18 minutes to get here along Queen Street.
Okay. You know what? No, I was going to do, this would be too hyper-local. What about walking down to the King Streetcar? The King Streetcar is way better than Queen. There's no diversions because of all the construction on Queen. The King Streetcar is the shit.
Yeah, Matt, you're right. And that's what I'm going to do from now on, which is going to keep this pod weekly.
It's okay. Good. All right. And we could do 30 minutes on that, but yeah.
And have.
And
just check some of the older episodes. It's there.
It is all there. We'll get into Lyubushkin.
Lyubushkin, Lyubushkin. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's for you Kate Bush fans out there. For the one person out there who might like Kate Bush who listens to our pod.
Our audience? I bet there are several Kate
maybe,
Bush.
Maybe.
I think there is. I've got a opening thought I'm doing today that involves the coward of the county, Kevin Durant, that I want to...
That sounds like a Don Knotts movie.
Yeah, it really does. By the way, don't look at the lyrics of Coward of the County. Very dark. And finally, though, real quick, here's a difference between you or I, or the difference between having children and not having children. I realized this. The other day, I have now watched all 10 Oscar-nominated movies.
Ooh, and I was actually thinking, can I get to half? If I, because now with streaming, it's a little easier. You don't have to go to the theater. I can watch Killers of the Flower Moon on Netflix. I can watch, what else can I see? I've seen Oppenheimer. I saw that in the theater. What else is out there on streaming right now?
Barbie. You can get Barbie on Crave.
Saw it in the theater.
Did
I tell you my Barbie moment? I guess I didn't. Did I tell you how I ripped down the stand by accident?
No.
Oh, Jesus. So, you know, like all the kids there and having fun and they're all dressed up and there's a Barbie box. It looks like the box that the Barbie comes in.
Yeah.
And you go in and you're supposed to take pictures and, you know, it's for Instagram. I line up to go in. Sandra takes my picture, but I accidentally try to lean on the back of the box, thinking it's supported, but it's not. So the box comes crashing down around me.
So what you're telling me is the older white man just ripped down, like you were the patriarchy. You were the patriarchy.
I didn't go in intending to play the role of the patriarchy, but yeah, I guess I did. And all these kids are staring at the box on the ground. Like they've lined up and they've wanted this moment for weeks. And the guy who looks like Santa Claus ripped it down.
Good for you, Bob.
Thank you
and Tucker Carlson exposing Barbie and the great supermarkets in Russia.
Does this mean I get to interview Putin now?
You do. You still married, by the way?
You know, I've been out of the house for an hour and a half, but when I left, yes.
We'll find out when you get back.
Okay, I've got an analogy for Lyubushkin for you.
All right.
And this is a Matt Cos special.
Ooh.
So
my favorite.
Waiting for a right D when you're a Leafs fan is like when you're at a restaurant and you've ordered and you're hungry and the food hasn't come yet and you're wondering, okay, where's the food? And then the waiter comes by and you're thinking, this is going to be great. And he puts in front of you dinner rolls.
Oh.
Lyubushkin is dinner rolls.
Okay, that is a good analogy. I'm going to add to it, but you're so hungry, you don't care. The dinner roll, you watch Mitch Marner play defense last night against the Coyotes, and you're like, oh, fuck it, I don't care. You know what, at that point, just let the butter be soft.
Well,
don't let it be cold butter.
And Tanev, going to the Stars was like when you're hungry and in that situation and you see the waiter come with a whole bunch of plates.
Yeah.
And then goes to the table next to you.
And even worse,
they got there after you did.
And then you, oh, yes. Wait a minute. I was here 5 minutes before them.
I ordered first. And then you look at the person who got the dish that's clearly like the one that they don't cook much in the kitchen, so they can't just reheat that stuff. It's like, who got the salmon at the steakhouse?
Yeah. And also then you order what they had, and they're like, oh, no, I'm sorry, we ran out. That was the last Dover sole.
The last Dover sole.
That was the pompous food I could think of.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. Swimming in butter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, here we are. We wake up in the morning. Last night, another non-stellar night for the health of the defensive core of the Maple Leafs. Giordano is so old.
Yeah.
Like, no disrespect to him. He's been an incredible player. But nobody could look at that and say, oh, son of a bitch, now we're cooked. But with Liljegren hurt and, you know, this was, man, I've been hungry at this table for so long. Got the dinner rolls.
Yeah.
I guess it's okay. They're clearly not done. With the salary retention that happened as they kind of filtered it through Anaheim and then another pick goes to Carolina.
That's fine.
Yeah. Like they've kept their powder dry for maybe one more move. But I think what we have to realize is whatever happens next is going to be appetizers. It might be a little better than dinner rolls. It ain't going to be your steak.
No, it's not. Yeah. At best, it's a brothy soup, I think, yeah, is what it is.
Like a vichyssoise.
Oh, I love vichyssoise. I wish Amy was still here. She hates it. It's my favorite soup. Vichyssoise cold potato soup is my number one favorite soup.
So, and Matt Dumba sounds like a potato soup.
He does. Oh, my God. You're so right.
So, okay. The rolls are here and we're waiting on our potato soup to come from Minnesota.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I'll have the Dumba. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right now, we could probably use the Dumba. You know, it's funny because the Leafs are playing really well.
Yep.
And we've all seen this story before and no one cares.
Again, I always say the worst part for the Maple Leafs is when they win, no one cares. When they lose in the regular season, everyone cares. Like, wait a minute. If you're not going to care when we're doing well, then you can't care. Ah, never mind. You're right. You know?
Just do what you want. It's $500 to go see a game. Just do what you want.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I don't care. You know, however people behave. Well, as long as you're...
I like Lyubushkin.
Yeah.
You know, he's a perfectly capable NHL player. We liked him when he was here.
Yeah.
He added something to the vichyssoise.
He's, you know, the little bit of dill, you know, on top.
He's the dill. By the way, Slavic cooking, Russian cooking.
Dill-based.
And this is something I realized as I go into other cultures around the world is, wait a minute, you don't put one sour cream or two dill on everything?
Yeah, it's true.
I put dill in my scrambled eggs and people think that's weird, I'm like, no, this is just what you do on a Tuesday.
All this food talk makes me think you're still doing the intermittent fasting.
So hard right now, man. I'm halfway, or I guess I'm probably at the 40% mark of Lent.
Uh-huh.
So I've really tried to double down. You're a marathoner.
Yeah.
What statistically, like what percentage point of the race is the hardest to get through? When does it really kick in that, look, two questions. When does it kick in that, fuck, I'm really doing this and there's lots to go? And two, when do you want to quit the most?
Kilometer 30, the hardest part is kilometer 33.
Okay, so 30? In terms of miles, because I'm only a mediocre Canadian.
Mile 18 to 23. Okay. That's the 5 mile period where it's the absolute worst.
Okay, so that'll be me at the end of March break.
Okay, March 1st. So you still got a little bit of time to go.
Oh, yeah, and that's why I'm saying I'm at about the 40% mark right now.
Yeah.
And this is when you're supposed to be kicking in and feeling good about what you're doing, but I don't.
No, it's true.
No.
Well, I wish.
But you're too far in to stop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. You don't want to be that. I mean, when I did the last marathon, I did with a bad hamstring, and the race didn't start till 9:30 in the morning in early September in France. It was hot as hell. It was so hot that day.
Do you remember in Macbeth, and I can say you probably might because you're a theater guy,
mm-hmm.
where he has the speech where he says, okay, I've killed a bunch of people, and I'm kind of so far in at this point. Like, it would be just as hard to stop killing as it would be to keep going.
Yes.
So I might as well just keep killing.
And if I don't, my wife is going to be super pissed.
So I'm kind of at the Macbeth moment where I'm like, well, yeah, these meals aren't going to skip themselves. I better do it. And the problem is I kind of look better, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, my wife wasn't going to leave me when I was 10 pounds overweight. So if I'm 5 pounds thinner and looking more trim, you know.
She's not leaving now. I mean, until...
Again, the Macbeth thing.
Yeah.
It'd be just as hard to leave as it would be to stay.
Out, damn Mackowitz. Out.
So maybe Adam Larson, maybe Potato Soup Dumba. We'll see what happens.
To me, and this is only in the world... This complaint is only in the world of social media, not in the world of reality. But it's been so predictable with Labushkin, because then it's just all the analytics people hate it. And then it's Dubas versus Lamarillo, Dubas versus Treliving, and I test. Wait a minute, but you guys loved Labushkin before. Why not now? And Corey Landsberg has some cutting tweets. And this is the annoying, predictable part of all of it, is it's not about what happens on the Leafs defense. It's we're going to relitigate every general manager over the last 12 years.
It's like when you have a fight in a relationship. The fight is an invitation to remember all the other fights.
Yes, exactly.
Do you remember last year when you left me at the bus station and you didn't even tell me you weren't coming to pick me up, and I had to sit there and guess for myself for 3 hours? And you're like, but wait a minute, we're talking about whether or not we should get salmon or shrimp for tonight.
Yeah.
Like, why are we back to last year? Because I'm mad.
And then the complaint is, well, I thought you were going to get your license. Yeah, but I've been here dealing with my daughter. Yeah, and then and by the way, the answer, of course, is shrimp.
What I think is interesting is, you know, there's been a little bit of this talk this year of should the Leafs go all in? But I don't think they've been really good enough to justify going in, and they haven't been bad enough to justify selling. They're kind of in a, not necessarily a mushy middle, but it's pretty clear what they're going to do. They're going to upgrade wherever they can. They don't have a ton of assets, so they'll do what they can. The real interesting time is going to be the summer. So much of the summer depends on how things go, because it could either be we're going to go and try and get the final piece, or we're going to just reinvestigate the entire core four theory. The summer is going to be really interesting. The next week's not going to be that interesting for the Leafs. And I'll go one step further.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be, because we still have Ryan O'Reilly scorch marks. That was supposed to be the final piece. I think I called it the Owen Nolan deal for the Leafs this time around. This was the one that was going to put them over the top into the third round, maybe even the final. It was okay, and then he left.
And then he left. You know, Nick Foligno, you know, before that.
For a first round.
Take that, Dubas. But what about Nikita Zaitsev? All right. The problem is the Leafs are a good team with three elite players, and you don't want to punt on it when you're having the season that Matthews is having, Nylander's having, and Marner as well now. God, he was great last night. It's so that's where you are. You're in the middle. Are we great? No. Do we have three great players? Yes. Now what? I don't know. Larson?
The name that's really interesting to me, Maddie, is Markstrom. Did you just say Markstrom?
No. I said Larson. I was on defense.
Okay, yeah.
There's no way they get Markstrom.
No, I agree. But to me, that would have been interesting. Oh. To me, that would have been saying, okay, we want to rethink this team a little bit. Joseph Woll came back and he looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? 30 saves and, you know, he's coming off injury, so we'll see. Do we trust him to be the kind of goalie who gets you to the final or the third round? I don't know.
Aiden Hill won it all last year.
Honestly,
so
like,
maybe.
When it comes to goaltending, like who... Yeah, fucking knows. Like it's honestly like you just, it's like kickers in football, but worse.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you've no idea. At the very least, I knew Vinatieri was going to get it done. In the NHL, you've got only like three of those guys. I was joking. If attendance is bad in Winnipeg, they should just relocate Hellebuck to the Maple Leafs.
The fact that there's a pretty substantial change in the hierarchy of the Maple Leafs too suggests that they're not going to go crazy with big deals, because I'm sure whoever comes in next, Keith Pelly, is going to run MLSSE, is probably going to want a full audit of where's this team going. He hasn't even started yet officially, though I'm sure he's behind the scenes doing it, so they're not going to do anything too huge.
No.
And nor should they. But I don't know. Maybe this is just like you wake up and it's sunny and you feel kind of good. I'm glad they got Labushkin. They needed hands on deck.
It's not a lot of money. Hands on deck. And it's not a lot of money as well. It's under $700,000. And again, Marner played right shot defense last night. So my feelings on Labushkin are a little higher today, because I'm staring at it on the screen. I'm like, am I seeing what I'm seeing? And then I'll go just check on, you know, like Dave Alter or Mark Masters or someone's Twitter account just to reinforce. Oh, I am seeing that. Okay, good.
I'm kind of, I saw one blog post that irritated me, and it wasn't around Labushkin. Like you're saying that there's the typical expected rush of criticism.
Yeah.
It was one blog post that was, thank God we didn't get Tanev. He's exactly the wrong kind of defenseman for this team. And I thought, okay, well, in one way, that's true. Like, you do want a puck-moving defenseman. And really, only Morgan Rielly is an above-average puck mover on this team. And you've got such fast forwards. You would love to be able to start transition quick and effectively. And the Leafs aren't really built for that. And yes, that's a roster construction problem. But here's the thing. We live on a planet called Earth. And on Earth, you can't snap your fingers and say, like, it's not like fantasy where you can just trade whenever you want willy-nilly. Yeah, I think Tanev would have been an imperfect fit, but he's also a very capable player.
Yeah.
Who plays on the right side, who's big. And if you partnered him with Morgan Rielly, sure, he's not going to light the league on fire, but he allows your best puck moving defenseman to have someone who's going to help safeguard defensive mistakes in the playoffs. So in a weird sort of way, it's funny, and I want to maybe transition to the Raptors here, if I may. I've been kind of irritated by the internet lately.
By the way, that's a sentence you can always say. And one last thought. You mentioned on Earth.
Yeah.
I've been also informed there are other NHL teams that also want right shot defensemen, so it's not easy to go get a Chris Tanev. But what's annoying you about the old internet?
Well, it's just the takes that exist, but they're hypothetical takes. It's almost like when you meet people who are like on the International Socialists Club in university, and they're like, hello, comrade, let's make sure all the workers are liberated. And you're like, well, I agree. I would like to see the workers get a better deal. But apart from your manifesto, how do you propose we do this? Well, I think the important thing is just that we know it's important.
Got to topple the hierarchy.
Topple the patriarchy that's ripping down Barbie boxes everywhere.
Yeah, did you see that asshole Santa Claus, what he did?
I'm reading the grades from Raptors Republic on the other night against Dallas. And Emmanuel Quickley, A+. RJ Barrett, A+. Scotty Barnes, you know, whatever he got. And I thought to myself, does anyone care that they lost? But the analytics team, like that crew, love process so much that anytime they see something that contributes to process, it's almost like the results don't matter. It reminded me a bit of when Jeff O'Neill went nuts, when I can't remember who it was, but someone was saying, Freddie Gauthier, he's actually having a good year. And he's like, he hasn't scored.
Yeah.
He was a first round draft pick. He's in the lineup and he hasn't scored. How can you say he's having not just even an okay year or it's a a good year.
Yes.
A good year with zero goals. But, oh, he fulfills a need, and he has this stat XYZ that's really good. And
yeah, that's when he was yelling at graphs. That's when Jeff O'Neill was doing it. By the way, Raptors Republic, I go there, and I appreciate, man, they get that stuff out fast. But, yes, from time to time, I look at the grades, and I'm like, where were you in my grade 7 French class? I could have used you in my grade 7 French class. Zut alors.
I want to talk about inflated grades a little bit over the next, like, it's kind of a theme for the next 20 minutes of conversation in a way.
Okay.
I'm reading this article. Again, I think it was Raptors Republic. It was one of them. But someone who was writing an article about how great Scotty Barnes has been since the trade, and they pointed out to a number of really important underlying stats in which he had shown meaningful improvement. I'm thinking, does anyone remember when he quit on the team?
Yeah.
Or does everyone remember when he's like freaking out on refs all the time or not getting back on defense and pouting and how this guy's supposed to be like the face of the team and he's acting like a total suckhole? Does anybody remember that? Or are we going to really like go to town on his inbound play percentage? It's that fear of narrative though.
Yeah.
Right? It's sort of like you don't really understand sports. You just get sucked in by quote unquote narrative.
I think part of it also is when you're in generalization alert, when you're younger, and especially a part of it also is just a new generation where there isn't as much criticism. There isn't as much being even like honest criticism, being critical. Everything is much more pro player. And I think a lot of it is, as was an overcorrection for maybe too much on the other side in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, where, and especially if you're young, it's going to be give much more the benefit of the doubt, be much more pro player. And I think that can sometimes shade a little bit looking at the entire picture.
So they lose to Dallas the other night, and Luka has a triple double. And it got me to thinking, and this conversation's been out there quite a bit, but we kind of had it in our faces, literally, during that game. How interesting it is that if you look at the top seven players, the top seven players that I think most people would put in some order, but probably these seven, I just wrote down in no particular order, Giannis, Jokic, Embiid, Luka, Steph, Shea, and Tatum. that of those seven, only two are American.
Yeah.
That's really amazing. And I've been listening now to the American podcasters going, what happened to our game? Mm-hmm. And it reminded me so much of the dialogue in Canada from about 20 years ago with Swedes and Russians and what happened to our game.
Yep.
It's funny because everybody wants their game to be international and then they hate it when it becomes international.
It's so true. It's like, these games are all blowouts. But if it's a gold medal game and Canada's in there, I'm fine with a blowout.
It's funny because I was thinking, to borrow a phrase from TikTok, the Olympics are going to be lit. We actually could medal.
Oh, Bob, it seems someone has walked into my trap.
Oh, I love walking into traps when I come out unscathed.
My opening thought today,
mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant, coward.
Was it the
Coward of the County?
That's it.
The other day came out and said, I want to show the world how good we are. I want to go out and win by 40 and 50. I heard that and it just got my blood boiling. Because let me tell you something. The single best sporting event coming this year is in July. And it's Paris. It's the Olympics. It's the men's basketball team. To the women out there, thank you for all you did. You got us gold in soccer. Now it is time. And so my whole opening thought is this weekend, Dylan Brooks is going to be facing against Kevin Durant. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Lu Dort, they're going to be taking on the Yankee Doodle Durant on Sunday. Tonight, RJ Barrett and Kelly Olynyk are going to be taking on Steph Curry. It is time to stand on guard and defend threes. My whole opening thought is I'm weaving the Canadian national anthem into a weekend where all of Canada's top Canadian players are taking on Steph and Durant and Devin Booker and LeBron James. So that's my whole opening thought is based on that. I am so excited for and I looked it up. The group stage is in July. It's like on a Saturday, July 27th. The group stage starts. I can't wait.
Did you really say stand on guard for threes?
I might have. I might have.
That was really good.
Thank you. This is what you do when you don't have children. You have more time. So okay, here's what I wrote. I'm gonna read you. This is opening thought.
Ooh, preview of the thought.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, currently second on FanDuel, Brandon, to win the MVP, is playing Yankee Doodle Durant on Sunday. Shai, I'm going to need you to do what you've done all year. Make shots from far and wide. Lu Dort, you got to stand on guard for Devin Booker's threes.
That's really good.
Thank you.
That's really good.
Yeah. Right.
This is what keeps you employed.
It does. I mean,
it's that kind of comedy material that keeps you employed.
The day's young. We'll see what happens first. Sandra divorces you or Belle divorces me.
We're only 90 minutes in. We're just at that 40% mark of the marathon.
But callbacks all over the place. But to your point, it's so true where we are right now when it comes to basketball. 20, 30 years ago, we never would have thought this. Just like we're lamenting no goaltenders for Canada for hockey, it is a crazy time. And honestly, I can't wait. I can't wait for the men's Olympic basketball tournament.
International basketball just used to mean giant white guy in size 21 Converse.
Yeah.
Plays in the paint, puts his arms up, takes up space, gets a lot of rebounds, generally doesn't shoot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's also, wait a minute, the refs aren't calling shit. Like just the international game, it's different.
Yeah, it really is. If we have, let's just assume, but it's Alexander and Jamal Murray in the backcourt.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have the best backcourt in the entire tournament.
Yep, 100%.
It's not Steve Nash, who might have been the single best guard in the tournament when they, you know, were really exciting back in 2000, because it was Steve Nash and then a bunch of guys who couldn't play in the NBA. But now it's the best backcourt and a bunch of people who do. Like, we're actually going, I'm worried about center. Center's not as strong as it could be. Think about that versus 20 years ago. We're talking about going up against the Americans and go, I wish center was a little stronger. Before it was like, I wish we had tanks.
Yeah. It's true. And now Kelly Olynyk. That's fine. That's a good international center. He'll be fine.
He's capable.
Yeah. How excited would we have been if you take Kelly Olynyk's career and put it back in 2000, we would have been he would have been the second best player on the team.
Matt, we were going into those tournaments saying, well, we've got Kelly Olynyk. Who else do we have? As opposed to like the 12th guy that you mentioned is Kelly Olynyk.
Oh, yeah.
And Dylan Brooks, the way he showed out, it completely redeemed him in the nation's eyes. So excited to see. I love how you said he's going up against Yankee Doodle Durant. That's such a good line. Good for you.
Dylan Brooks is now the number one Canadian sports villain. He's taken over for Brad Marchand. And if he does great in Paris, he becomes the greatest Canadian villain since Jim Carrey and Cable Guy.
Yeah, ooh, that's pretty good. Did you just come up with that off the top of your head? You wrote that down?
I wrote that down.
That one felt a little too rehearsed.
I was going to say, I wrote that one down. Okay, can I give you one more cheesy line?
Yeah, please. As many as you can spare.
Yeah, I got one on R.J. Barrett. Okay, now this is...
R.J. Barrett looks pretty good, actually.
Well, that was the point. Like, I don't have the line in front of me, but we see the rise. Mine is, since he got traded from the Knicks, is we see his shooting splits rise. So I've sort of mixed those two.
Yeah, you're still workshopping that one.
Yeah,
right?
I'm workshopping that one a little bit. But you got RJ Barrett as well. As you said, Dylan Brooks. They could win in a single game elimination. I mean, a 7-game tournament. I'm giving it still to the Americans, obviously.
I think they can medal.
Yeah.
If they wind up on the podium, it is a massive, massive accomplishment. We're talking about how great that tournament's going to be. We haven't even mentioned the star attraction yet. Mm. Wemby.
Oh, I know. Well, he beat Shea and Dort and Chet Holmgren last night. Victor Wembanyama could eliminate any country in a single game.
Let me give you his stat line from last night. Mm-hmm. 27 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 blocks, 5 of 7 from 3. At 7'4", who the hell is this? You know what I was thinking? We were talking the other day about how sports was consumed. Wemby, to me, is the face of the future, not just because he's an incredible player, but because you can't even call him a unicorn anymore. LeBron has gone out and called him the alien. He is TikTok.
Oh.
If you try to get people excited about sports nowadays, you can't do it with highlights anymore. The idea that we're going to show you someone who does the sport better than anyone else, it's just not that exciting. It's a bit like, you know, when you order adult movies in the hotel room. After 3 days, like, it's not like, ooh.
Yeah. Look at that. Nudity. By the way, off topic for half a second.
Of course.
If you were ever...
Off topic is on topic, Matt.
Fair point. But I still have to say off topic. Like, I'm, you know, it's an illusion of everything is organized. If you were ever wondering, can I get tired of seeing Emma Stone naked? The answer to that question is yes. Go see Poor Things. But at one point, I look at Amy, I'm like, I'm tired of her nipple.
So, yeah. Interesting. Okay, I want to follow up on that,
though. All right.
Sidebar?
Yeah.
To your sidebar?
Okay, yeah.
None of which are sidebars?
Nope.
Sandra says to me, I want to go see Poor Things. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to see that movie. And I didn't say why.
Yeah.
I didn't say I'm not going to see it with you. But the truth was, I've been down this road before. And I know that this is maybe immature, but I can't go and see a movie where there is an actress that I clearly find attractive.
Yes.
Naked all the time.
All the time.
In front of my partner. I remember once, and I call this the Tina Fey laugh. So we're watching 30 Rock back in the day, and Tina Fey says something funny, and I go, I let out a big laugh, and she just looks at me with a death stare, which was not, you didn't find that funny. You think she's awesome.
Why is she funnier than I'm funny?
You know, yeah. And I thought, this is a non-win situation.
Yeah.
No, let's watch Mad Men.
Yeah. Then don't go see Poor Things because just naked all the time. By the way, Mark Ruffalo is a delight. Fantastic in it. It's a really good movie. It's a really good movie.
You know, Ruffalo is one of those actors I don't know how I feel about because he's clearly good, but I kind of wish he just didn't talk. And I don't necessarily disagree with what he says, but I'm just at the point now where because you act, you have opinions. I just don't care.
It's so true. It's like, I agree with everything you're saying. Now shut up.
And it's not even his fault because I bet you he lives his life like it's really important. He's probably involved in community activism, all that stuff. Like I'm not trying to judge him. It's unfair because so many of those idiots are such dilettantes that it just casts a shadow over all the good ones. Like James Cromwell, mm-hmm. Danny Glover, these people actually like do the stuff they say they're going to do. It's not that ribbon culture where you just show up and ask, okay, what color ribbon am I wearing at this event again? Who do I support?
James Cromwell, good range. Babe, and I watched LA Confidential yesterday.
I watched it recently too.
Really?
So good.
It is. Okay, sidebar to the sidebar to the sidebar. Okay,
go for it.
Okay. Gladiator.
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, thank you.
So good.
He had a run from LA Confidential, The Insider, Gladiator.
Master and Commander.
And A Beautiful Mind. Like, he had a run of like 5 years. And I think we don't think about it because he's gotten doughy and he does weird movies.
Well, he Mickey Rourked.
Well, not as much plastic surgery.
No, not as bad. Not as bad. But what happens is these guys who are like kind of rugged men's men start feeling like they need to prove that they're rugged men's men.
Right.
And so they just start drinking and fighting.
Yeah. Not intermittent fasting.
I don't think he's
skipping.
There's
none of that. But
yeah, I don't think he's skipping meals.
He was a real run.
The thing is, he was not only funny, but he kind of had like a sly humor to him. I even liked him as Hyde in The Mummy.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
because I just like him.
Yeah.
That's the thing about some actors. You just like them.
You just like seeing them. It's the same thing why I recommend everyone should go see Naiad. You're in the first minute, and Annette Bening.
American Gangster.
Yeah.
He's good in that
one,
too.
He's good in that as well. But these actors where you just trust them.
It's Annette Bening's a good choice.
Annette Bening and Jodie Foster and Naiad, within the first 5 minutes, you're like, okay, no matter what happens in this movie, you guys are taking me on a ride, and I'm going to trust you.
Angelica Houston walks on screen, and you go, this scene just got better.
Yes. Ah. We could just
well, we really have. So let me get back to Wemby and why he's TikTok.
By the way, I totally forgot what we were talking about. Thank God. Yes, Wembanyama, TikTok, getting young people consuming basketball.
Because when you look at what he does, he's not just playing basketball well, he's playing it differently. Mm-hmm. And so it stands out. And in our attention-thirsty economy, it used to be that we ran on oil, now we run on attention. If you can get someone's attention, you can get their money. Show me Steph shooting from half court and I yawn, even though it's kind of awesome, but I've seen it so many times. But Wembanyama in the paint, just sort of reaching over someone like he's trying to grab cookies from the top shelf and depositing the ball in over, he makes them look like kids. He makes other defenders look like kids. It stands out so much that it's perfect for TikTok because I see it, it spikes my dopamine. I go, that's really cool. And then it's over.
And then you go watch 4 videos of golden retrievers cooking and someone in a bathing suit. So
he's the face of the league, not just because he's going to be excellent. He's already excellent. It's not even just because he's going to be dominant. He's already kind of dominant. It's because he's doing it in a way that is perfect for the medium of the moment, which is TikTok, which is shock me for 15 seconds and then don't ask anything of me after that.
That 15 seconds, when they play against the Raptors, it was block, rebound, effortless three. Like, it's one thing, block, rebound, dunk. I've seen that. I've seen rebound three. I haven't seen block, rebound three. That's what Wembanyama's doing. And if we're going to stick with, like, the international flair of basketball, maybe the second strangest thing to see up close is what Luka does when you just see his body. If you watch a Dallas Mavericks game without volume, and again, no children, I can do these things, and you watch Luka before, you know, the ball leaves his hands, a lot of times you're like, who the fuck's this? Like, doughy.
Well, you know what he is?
He looks like Russell Crowe.
He does look like Russell Crowe. I was going to say he looks like 1970s wrestling.
Yes. Oh, better. That's
oh, look
much
at
better.
Bruno Sammartino and Larry Zbysko. Yeah. Are these guys in shape? Yeah. I don't know, but this is a lot of fun.
He's fighting Macho Man. I wonder who's going to win. Oh, that match is over.
Let me give you the stat line for Chet last night, because Chet's having an incredible rookie season. He had 23 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. That's a great night.
Yeah.
That's a great night going up against your rival. Let me revisit Victor's numbers, though. 27, 13, 7, 5 blocks, 5 from 7 from 3. And this quote afterwards, because he hit the dagger of a 3, which kind of cemented the game at the end. And he said, I would say it's a requisite for any player to want the ball down the stretch to be great.
Oh.
It was like the perfect night. He destroyed his closest competitor, took his shitty team, and beat a team that is an outside finals contender. maybe even not that outside anymore.
Yeah, they're a year away. They're really young, but no, the Thunder.
I think so, but yeah. they could make a run. They could wind
up
there.
50-win team. They'll be like a top three seed in the West.
And this might be unfair to Scotty, but after watching Scotty pout to the refs and walk off the court earlier, to have him come out and say, "Well, I would think anybody would want the ball so I can kill my enemy," and then you go back to Scotty, I can see him in my mind right now, shrugging and yelling with a bowl of Subway something in one hand and an empty outstretched palm in the other. Like the guy we got that's supposed to be a generational player, we're not even sure if he's going to be a good player.
He's going to be good.
He's going to be fine. But a good number one.
No, no. Well, I mean, that's the question that 80% of NBA teams wonder about. With Scotty, the issue is what you just said about the Wemby quote. He's still finding his way about being aggressive, about taking the shots, about getting to the basket late in games. We saw this with Siakam, funnily enough, when he's like, "Yeah, I wasn't sure if I'm supposed to be the man," like when Lowry was there and then Lowry left and Siakam was adjusting to that role. And I think Scotty Barnes is doing the exact same thing right now.
Let me ask you a question, and this just popped up spontaneously in my head as you were talking.
Yeah.
I think that you can learn to be a great player. But do you have to have greatness born in you? Like Scotty may learn to be an outstanding player. Kawhi did. But did he though? Or was Kawhi born that way and he just simply needed his skills to catch up to it? Like is it just, like when I think about Kobe, Michael, LeBron, like these players that are, even Giannis, like nobody had to tell them to crush the enemy.
Yeah.
That's all they wanted. Can you teach someone to crush the enemy?
No, I don't think so. But if I'm going to go back and make another Tucker Carlson joke.
Yeah, dude.
It's a choice. You're not born with it. It's a choice.
God.
You know it and I know it.
You know, I met him.
What's that?
He was on the old talk show once upon a time. And he came in and it was still when he was bow tie.
Yeah,
Tucker,
yeah.
And he hadn't quite lost his mind on Fox yet. He was still just yelling about shit on CNN. Very bright.
That's the thing. He's very bright. He's very bright. He's very talented. I can even forget.
Oh, he's a grifter.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. But the Poon one. Anyway.
Oh, that's the one.
Yeah. One of many. I think it's in you. Because you know why? Because it's so rare. If it's something that you can really develop, then there is 1,000 coaches working 1,000 hours, and other coaches and assistants and strength trainers, and every player is having psychiatrists and psychologists and reading books of the Art of War or whatever, but we still only have a certain amount of those.
So I remember, when you talk to people about what makes a player great, like people who are in that sport, coaches, GMs, whatever, and they'll say, well, they just want it more than everyone else. And you think, well, it's the highest professional league in the world.
They all want it.
They all want it. And they've all had to sacrifice and they've all had to work. Like nobody just kind of cruises to the NBA and certainly doesn't cruise to the NBA and does well there. That's just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean to want it more than everyone else? And I guess there's that thing. Like I remember reading John Coltrane would play 2 live sets and go back to the hotel room. And once he would practice all night long. And once someone complained, so you know what he did?
Threw the cymbal.
No, he sat there in the quiet and just fingered the songs for 2 hours.
Really?
And pretended he was playing. Like he was so focused. You know, Miles Davis used to say, I was so into music that as a kid, if a door creaked, I could tell you what note it was. there's just some people just are dogs on bones. And then there's another group that are like, it's almost like they're not even real. And my point is that I'm trying to get at with all this.
Yeah.
I think Wemby has that.
Yeah.
You know, when you hear about his routine and his regimen and he does like 20 minutes of stretching on his feet every day. And
it's like, scary.
It's like he knows everything he needs to do.
Yeah.
And he wants to do it all and more.
Imagine if Zion Williamson had that.
Yeah, but that's a great analogy. We talked last week about who's going to have more all-NBA teams, Zion or Ben Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, according to talent, Zion should be on 2 or 3 of them by the time he's done.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal, but he doesn't want it enough. And who are we to say? But you can only judge the results. Like if you show up too heavy and everyone says you're too heavy and a couple months later, you're still too heavy and you're not hurrying back to the court because, someone rang the dinner bell. You don't want it enough.
And also, but then now it gets into a bigger topic about quality of life and basic humanity, because it's always the debate, can you be the best at your sport and be a normal person?
Or the best at anything, really.
Yeah, the best at anything. Can you be a good father, mother, husband, wife, you know, the friend, all these different things? You always hear the stories of, you know, certain players go, yeah, I just didn't, there was the baseball interview. Anthony Rendon of the Anaheim Angels of Orange County came out and said, no, this is a job. This is not my top priorities.
Like, my family and my faith.
My family and faith. Now, you can be a cynical and go, well, you did win a World Series and you got $180 million. It's easier to say that now. But it does open up that debate about, then we talk about it more now than we did 20 years ago, life-work balance. And I do wonder, can you be the best at your thing and be a well-adjusted person in all other phases?
You've known me a long time.
Yeah.
And you know that I was always very driven at work.
Yes.
But I also knew deep in my heart that there was a place I would not go. Mm-hmm. I would not be an asshole to people. I would not, you know, eschew or do a shitty job of being a family man.
Yeah.
You know, I would try to live according to a certain moral standard that for me has a kind of a spiritual dimension to it, but it doesn't have to for other people if it doesn't want to. But the point is, I could never be the best at what I do, bringing that kind of baggage. You're swimming with jeans on.
Yeah.
And I have a different version of excellence. And Anthony Rendon, maybe trying to be an excellent human being by balancing great baseball with great human relationships. But this may be apocryphal. Maybe it's not true. It's been attributed to Mark Messier. But I remember someone saying, Messier said, I don't want to start a family until I retired because I don't want to have to split my focus.
Yeah.
And he's one of the great champions of all time, you know.
And there's truth to that. There's like, I think we all have a different version of the finish line. My version of a finish line is different than what Kobe Bryant's was. Like, for instance, I work my ass off, and people are like, well, you should be doing more. Why aren't you a bigger star? Why, you should be doing more TV? And people have said, oh, do you want to do TV and things like that? And I'm always like, no. And I'm like, the money and fame could be more famous. It could be better there. But I love radio. And my version of winning, it isn't about having the most Twitter followers or being the most famous or just having that endorphin rush of fame. As you know me, Bob, I wake up most days happy. I go to bed most days happy. I visit my family. I see my friends. And I enjoy my wine with Amy while eating duck.
So to peel back the curtain between the Bob and Matt relationship,
yeah,
I'm a little bit older and I'm more experienced. Mm-hmm. And when we started working together, we always had this incredible ability to make each other laugh,
yep,
and make each other happy and enjoy. And I always thought that you were super smart, you know. So on that level, yeah, Matt's going to be a great partner. But what I always loved was I did worry about all that stuff. I wanted our show to be bigger.
Yep,
That was always important to me. But I never loved working with anyone as much as I loved working with you, because you are that way. Mm-hmm. And it was so great to see, and it kind of brought it out of me. I didn't need anyone to push me to want to be bigger.
Yeah.
I needed someone to remind me that that's not really the goal, that you can do the best you can do and enjoy that process. But other things count too.
Yeah,
and see it as a holistic thing. It's funny because when I was younger, the Anthony Rendon thing would have driven me crazy. You don't want it enough.
Yeah.
But what does he not want enough? My definition of success, because it sounds like his is pretty hard to achieve. Steph Curry, by all accounts, is a decent family guy. Steph Curry is also probably the greatest shooter in NBA history with 4 titles. He figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we talk about Steph as a killer or an alpha or a this or a that? He led 4 teams to championships and he's the greatest shooter in NBA history. But we don't talk about him the way we do Kobe, even though they've had just about as much success. And you can argue that Steph was the better player.
Now, here's this hypocrisy for me. As a sports fan, what would I want on my team? Would I want my star player to be more like me? Or would I want my star player to be more like Kobe? And for my sports happy, I don't want me being the star. I want the psycho. And by the way, it doesn't always work out that way. There's some people that have had incredible careers, have been the best, and they've been well-adjusted. But there's part of me that's like, no, I think I want the psycho. more. I want the Messier more than the Matthew.
It's a great question. And in some ways, it kind of explains the joy of the third line grinder. Mm-hmm. Because it gives us all we want. We can let, if we find out that Austin Matthews is obsessed with winning and nobody on the team likes him, but he puts up routinely 60-plus goals, I think we're okay with that. As long as we have someone on the third line that we can go, and that's my guy. I love that guy.
Because we like see ourselves in them.
We see ourselves in them.
Why, getting back to the first part of the conversation, and again, generalization alert, why do a lot of the younger people, the analytics people, love Kyle Dubas? Because they see themselves in him. They don't see themselves in Lou Lamoriello. They don't see Brad Treliving in them.
Oh, you mean the young guy with the Hollywood casting glasses, mm-hmm. that says smart with stats?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We, you know, like, it's funny. But we see ourselves more in Jerome, JYD, the junkyard dog, than we do in Vince Carter.
Well, it's funny. And this goes back to my point about Wemby and TikTok, which is, we love the idea that Luca kind of looks like a regular person and he does all this stuff. Like, we do love that.
Yeah.
But TikTok moves us further and further away from that. It's like, show me something I never expected. Show me, like, take me out of my comfort zone. Like, dazzle me. Get my dopamine firing. He's 7'4" and he can do all these crazy things. He looks like CGI. We live in a CGI world. He's the closest thing on the sports in sports right now to sports CGI. That's why I think he's going to be the face of sports probably in North America if he keeps this going. Is that a good thing? I don't know. I like him.
Yeah. You know what it makes me think of also? I don't know who I'm more angry at, the Spurs or the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Where's this going? I have no idea.
This will make a lot of sense.
Okay.
Spurs are shit. They get David Robinson. The one year David Robinson gets hurt, they're shit. And that was the year Tim Duncan is coming out. And then when are they really shit? When Victor Wembanyama. They just, and again, there is some luck with the draft lottery, but man, they.
So is this a Favre, Rodgers, and maybe even Jordan Love kind of thing?
Exactly. The last time Green Bay didn't have elite level quarterback play, George Bush Sr. was the president of the United States. That's how long ago it is.
We probably don't have a lot of time left, and I got a couple questions for you.
Oh, yeah.
Including one that I thought you would really, really love.
All right.
So on this day in 1949, 75 years ago, Joe Louis retired.
Ah.
Joe Louis, arguably the greatest pound-for-pound fighter of all time.
Schmeling. Yeah. Beat that Nazi.
So here's my question. So that was 1949. I was thinking, God, boxing was amazing then. There were so many great fights and so many great fighters. And then I thought, would it be more fun? Here's the question for you. Would you rather be a sports fan in 1949 or today? In 49, boxing, horse racing,
baseball,
college football, but more importantly, no night games, mm-hmm. radio,
yeah.
newspaper columnists rule the world.
Oh, definitely 49. Because you have mystery. They're your heroes. You don't have cynicism, and cynicism is good and important. But we didn't know their flaws. We only know them. Like, it was almost like watching, it was Avengers. It was like watching superheroes. And there is something great about that. And then it was all based on writing and the newspapers and just more lyrical. And yes, I know I'm waxing poetic about wishing for a better time and all that shit. But yeah, I think I would take 49.
And to your, you know, talk about like waxing poetic, your dad's a really good sports writer,
mm-hmm.
and kind of is a sports writer in the tradition of that 1949 mentality.
Oh yeah,
you cover the sport, you try to capture it as lyrically as possible. I think I'm with you in that I would rather be a sports fan in 1949, even though all of a sudden I don't have games every night and I don't have the internet to keep me up to date.
Yeah, you don't get all the highlights.
And I don't have as many sports to choose from.
Yeah.
And I don't have, like, there was gambling then, there's gambling now, but there wasn't stuff like fantasy or, there was probably a closer relationship with the sport, because this is what our modern life has taught us, is that scarcity and a lack of access feel wrong, but they actually create value.
Yeah. Just ask the NFL. I would take it. By the way, I always love when my dad would interview Punch Imlach, and Punch would just say, Lou, write whatever you make up any quote you want. Just make sure I don't sound illiterate. That's what Punch in the Lab said to my dad. Just
make up any quote you want.
Yes. Just make sure I don't sound illiterate.
I want to follow this topic a little more, but tell the story, because your dad used to score the games. He was the official score.
Scorer
for the Blue Jays. At the Jays game.
Yep.
Tell him the Robbie Alomar story.
Oh, yeah, the Alomar, well, there's actually the better one is the Paul Molitor story.
Oh, okay. I don't think I know this
now, one. Now, Paul Molitor, three men on bases. When Molitor, I think it was with Minnesota, but after he left Toronto, so after the World Series, it probably was an error. But my dad, you know, he said, that's a hit, you know. And much later, Paul Molitor signed a ball and said, thanks for the three RBI, Lou. Still remembered.
That's amazing. Now, do you think it was probably leftover warm feelings from the World Series win in 93?
It could have been.
Yeah.
You know, what harm was done aside from one pitcher's ERA getting goosed up higher than maybe it should have been? But yes, every now and then my dad would get calls from Alomar or Carter or players asking him to review the film because they thought they should have had a hit.
It's really, you said something really important about writing, because you came back to writing a few times in your answer, and writing activates theater of the mind, just as radio activates theater of the mind. Like, you love when you watch these movies and someone's calling a AAA game and there's a hit and they get the little hammer and they go,
yeah,
to indicate that there was a hit. In your mind, you're thinking, oh, a big swing or whatever. This is one of the weird things about how our brains work. We do better when we have less. And we're enthusiastic about filling gaps, as opposed to when we have tons and we're sorting through stuff. The fallacy of choice. It's the Netflix conundrum. I love the fact that I can watch so many different things, except when I hate the fact that I can watch so many different things. Someone told me that on average, Americans spend up to 8% of their week looking for stuff to watch.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
That number feels low. It's true. We're always have the most imagination when there's the least in front of us. You know, like I sit here quietly writing my goofy opening thought, and there's some clever lines here there, but like I'm just there alone, just writing, listening to music, like jazz in the background, and yeah, you are definitely more creative there. And it's the same thing. I love the fact that on my TV, when I want to watch Amadeus, Arrival, or Kill Bill Volume 2, they're all there for me. But I will spend sometimes just standing. Scrolling, looking. And the crazy thing is, 20 years ago, if you gave me this technology, I'd be like, holy shit. And the first movie I wanted to watch, I would have put it on. But now I'm like, that's a good movie. But maybe there's better.
Well, and this goes back to the TikTok thing with Wemby, is that if you show me highlight after highlight after highlight of somebody, here's an amazing drive, here's a two home run night. If you pummel this with me constantly, do you remember watching on CNN back in the day, Fred Hickman and Nick Charles?
Oh, hell yeah.
Right? They were this great duo, and you had to wait till 11:30 on CNN to watch them do their thing, or Taddy on Sportsline back in the day with Hebscher.
Yes, guy.
But you didn't have access to it before that. So even though it was just highlights, it was like, this is amazing. I can see a little bit of every game. Mm-hmm. And you make that ubiquitous 24/7 and it loses all specialness. But it also, in a weird sort of way, devalues the sport. Because what's the sport going to give me now? Like, it's just dull. Like, you've given me the choice cuts. I don't even care about the choice cuts anymore.
Well, you said earlier.
We watch more sports and love more sports and don't care about sports at the same weird time.
Well, you said earlier, the Steph Curry long three, that doesn't excite me as much anymore. Because now you got Wemby on TikTok getting a block, a rebound, and a three-pointer from almost the same range as Steph Curry. God, it's not fair. It's not fair, Spurs.
Okay, do I have time for one question?
Yes.
I was very proud of this one.
Okay, yeah, we're at the 54-minute mark.
All right, so this one is cheeky, and you may or may not have a real answer, but all is right. Who is more likely to be at the same job in 4 years?
Okay.
LeBron James or Joe Biden?
Oh.
That means doing the thing they're doing exactly right now. And that for LeBron, that includes for the Lakers. Who is more likely to be at the same job in 4 years? Joe Biden or LeBron James?
The answer is probably Joe Biden, because we haven't seen a president step down because of but he's got to win. He's got to beat Trump.
He's got to win and he's got to survive to get to 4 years.
Oh, it's LeBron.
Is it though?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, because
like,
LeBron,
what's the percentage chance that LeBron is a Laker in 4 years?
LeBron's not going to want to leave LA. So if he's still playing in the NBA, it's going to be for the Lakers.
We're assuming that his health holds for 4 years.
Of course it will.
Don't know that.
They don't test.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. That's a great question.
It feels like the Bronny factor is a big one. If the Lakers agree to sign Bronny James, his kid,
by the way,
he'll stay. But what if they don't?
Yeah.
And he just goes, okay, fuck it. I'm going to go to Charlotte then, and I'm going to play with my kid.
I'm not a father, but I like to give advice to parents.
Mm-hmm. LeBron, and we love to hear it.
You do. LeBron, maybe don't lament about all the pressure that the media is putting on your son or the hate that's going on your son when all the media did is not put your son in a mock draft. And you yourself went on Twitter and said that your son is better than some NBA players. You can't have it both ways.
I was listening to Ryan Russillo go off on this, and I thought he made a good point, which is he is trying to have it both ways.
Yeah.
And this is the one area in which I question LeBron. I think LeBron is pretty much on point with everything he does.
He's got a high batting average for how he lives his life.
Astonishing. Hey, I know we're wrapping up, but I want to say one quick thing.
Yeah.
We talk politics sometimes. Brian Mulroney passed away.
Yeah.
That was sad. You and I got to know Ben a little bit because we worked alongside him at the Masonic Temple so many years. And he was clearly, like, Ben, a really nice guy. And you just got a sense that family was really like a tight family.
Yeah.
And you love to see that. Politically, Brian Mulroney, like, I didn't necessarily agree with his approach, but when he passed away, it really reminded me of a moment in time of greater civility.
Yes.
Where you could disagree with someone but not hate them.
I was thinking the same thing. There wasn't all this theatrics. There wasn't Pierre Poilievre videos or Justin Trudeau. It was just more statesmen and less shit, more policy. I agree. I miss George Bush writing a handwritten letter to Obama when Obama took over and said, congratulations, and I wish you nothing but the best. Yes, civility.
You know, I looked at it and I thought, here was a guy that, you know, if he wrote up his plan and someone else wrote up their plan, I tended to go with the other guy's plan because I didn't think his was necessarily the best one. But I never said to myself, like, and this guy therefore hates me and everyone like me. And it's just he had a different plan. Like,
yeah.
I miss the days when politics was, here's a dollar, how do you want to spend it? Mm-hmm. As opposed to, are you going to hell or not?
Yeah, yeah.
So just, consolation offered to the family. They seemed like a very nice family. And really to all of us, just try to remember that the best parts of the political world are the ones who can disagree with each other and then get a beer afterwards. You know?
Yeah.
And I know that sounds really cheesy.
Like, but it's true.
But it's true.
It's true. That's the thing. Most cliches or things come from a basis of truth. Now they get perverted and warped, but there's truth to it. And yeah, absolutely. Bob? Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect way to end this. Great seeing you.
Good
look
to
at
see
this.
You too. Yeah, two in a row.
Two in a row. Of course, next Friday is the NHL trade deadline.
We'll do Thursday.
Yeah, we'll do Thursday.
Let's try to do Thursday if we can, because Jesus, trying to like, then you got to post the thing. Do you remember when we used to do trade deadlines and we'd get in there and it was the early part of the morning and nothing exciting had happened? So for the first 2 hours, we were treading water.
That or just laughing at James Duffy. Just laughing. All right, dance for us, monkey, dance.
So just to reset the table, here are the names still on the board.
Yep.
All of them.
All of them. And none of them are exciting. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.